So Rabbi Nachman, he was born in Uman. He was born in the 18th century in 1772. He produced a ton of Torah that most of was recorded after his lifetime, recorded by his student, Rabbi Natan. In a very short lifetime, he was born in 1772 and he died in 1810. So you can do the math there, about 38 years, I think, relatively short life. Rabbi Nachman is the great grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, the ultimate founder of Hasidut. Rabbi Nachman was married. He and his wife had together six daughters and two sons. And, you know, of the tragedies of Rabbi Nachman's life, one of the great tragedies of his life is that two of those daughters died in infancy and two of his sons died as toddlers. So in terms of the sort of the firsthand loss of experiencing the death of four children, all of whom died as young, that's something that sort of the pain and the loss and the suffering. This is something that Rabbi Nachman, when he writes about pain and suffering, he's not writing about in the abstract, he's writing about as someone who has firsthand experienced some of the greatest suffering that one can experience in life. Rabbi Nachman was a person who was both not averse to controversy. He actually has a lot of teachings about the value and importance of machloket, of controversy. He writes that if he's not sort of at the center of machloket, of controversy, then it's as if he's not living, that he's not growing. And he's also a figure that is plagued by a lot of controversy. Both in his lifetime, he sort of got into this major controversy with a Shpul Zaidi from Lotopol. Not in his lifetime, in the lifetime of his student, Rabbi Natan, the Sfaran Hasidim were very much like instigating controversy with the Breslov Hasidim. There was a lot of sort of infighting between them, but that the Breslov Hasidim were coming under a lot of attack. So both in terms of sort of like the firsthand suffering that he experienced with the loss of his children, and also the suffering that was brought on by the Breslov Hasidim coming under attack by sort of other groups of Hasidism, there was a lot of sort of that pain and darkness in his life. His own wife died young. She died early of tuberculosis, I think in about 1808. And then just a couple of short years later, Rabbi Nachman died himself of tuberculosis in 1810. So some of his teachings are also marked by talking about his illness and his suffering and the shortness of breath and his students caring for him. So just in that short life, there is so much Torah and so much light that comes from him, and also so much pain. So some of the themes that we see Rabbi Nachman pick up again and again in his writings, he writes a lot about doubt and uncertainty, struggling to sort of experience God through doubt, and it's sort of just incredible to see sort of a major Rebbe naming that doubt and naming that uncertainty. He struggles a lot with faith, and I'm not saying he struggles a lot with faith, but something that he writes a lot about is faith in God. What is faith? And also faith in oneself. And something that we're really going to focus on today is a lot of his writings touching on sadness and suffering. And also, on the other hand, joy, that he has these really deep and honest writings on suffering, and at the same time talking about the immense value and the mitzvah, the commandment to be happy. He's sort of an incredible figure that holds both the doubt and the certainty, the faith and the sort of the lack of faith, the deep suffering, the naming of it, and also the joy. There's a series of podcasts on Chassidut by Rabbi Joey Rosenfeld. He has a series called Inward. I'm going into different Hasidic teachings, and he has a few sessions that are on Rabbi Nachman. And when writing about Rabbi Nachman, he talks about Rabbi Nachman's use of the language of the afal pichen and daika. So afal pichen, normally we translate that as, and nevertheless, even so, this is true, nevertheless, such and such is true. And daika is connected to the word dafka, of it's like, you know, so hard to translate the word daika or dafka, but it's like specifically in that thing. And something that he writes about with Rabbi Nachman is that oftentimes we see Rabbi Nachman sort of using this language of the afal pichen and daika. So it could be, you know, it's like in the, even though a person is having a crisis of faith or is experiencing a lot of suffering, even though afal pichen, they're still able to come to God. But he says, and daika is sort of a language that's even stronger than the afal pichen. Afal pichen is, even so, this is true, nevertheless, you can still experience whatever that thing is. Daika is actually, it's precisely in that thing that you think is keeping you from God, it's actually through that that you come to God. And that's something that we're going to be exploring today, that one might think that the darkness is the thing that distances us and prevents us from God, or that suffering is the thing that's going to distance us and prevent us from finding joy. And it's actually dika. It's not nevertheless you can come to it, but it's actually dika. It's actually in that suffering. It's in that darkness that we can come to experience happiness and come to experience God. It's sort of a radical thing that Rabbi Nachman writes about, that we think that that is going to be the thing that is the barrier, but actually what we need to do is allow ourselves to go into that, because it is dika. It is in that thing that we will come to God, or is in that thing that will come to happiness. So that's what we're going to really be exploring today, is in Rabbi Nachman's writings, coming from such a personal place in his own life, is the relationship between sadness, great loss, and joy, and the relationship between sort of how that connects to resilience. How do we, as someone who has experienced so much loss in his own life, as people today that there's so much very, very real loss that many people are experiencing now, how can that loss actually be the conduit to lead us through something that looks like resilience? So that's where we're going to start. We have Rachel on the call, who's going to be helping us do some screen sharing. So you can either pull up the source sheet yourself if you have the binder, or Rachel will go ahead and start screen sharing now for you. I'll just wait for that to get ready. Okay. Great. So here we are. We're in the first source. So most of the teachings we're going to be looking at today comes from that would be great, Rachel. And if you could also put the link to the Google source sheet in the chat so people can pull it up on their own. Thank you. So the first source comes from Likutei Moharan, from Tanina, from the sort of the second volume of it. It's the Torah's 119. The last thing I want to say before we actually get into this is Rabbi Nachman has a teaching that all of our learning, that we should make a prayer of all of our learning, that so much of the time we learn things and we keep it on a totally intellectual level, or we learn it and we sort of go on with our day. And sort of the hope and goal when learning really any Torah, but also especially with the teachings of Rabbi Nachman, is that we should learn the Torah, and that then we should internalize the Torah, and then we should articulate the Torah of Rabbi Nachman into a prayer. And so that's my hope and intention with the learning today, is not that the learning stays intellectual for us, but that actually at the end of the session, God willing, if you remind me, I want to take a minute to actually have you take a second to sit with the teachings in the Torah and to see if you can articulate a prayer out of it, a prayer to take away from this, which is one of Rabbi Nachman's own teachings. Okay, so we're on Likutei Moharan, Tanina, this is the volume 2, Torah 119. I'll read this in the Hebrew and I'll do the translating. Diber imanu kama pa'amim me'inye yisurei olam hazeh. Shekol b'nei ha'olam kulam le'im yusurim. So Rabbi Nachman, this is coming through Rabbi Natan, his student, who's sort of reporting the teachings of Rabbi Nachman. He said, Rabbi Nachman spoke with us a couple of times about the matter of suffering in this world, olam hazeh, that all of the people of this world are full of suffering. Ein gam echad shiyelo olam hazeh. There is no one in this world that has this world, which is sort of, I think, an interesting way of saying, it's almost like there's so much suffering in this world that no one is able to really be present fully in this world. There's sort of such a lacking that none of them actually sort of have a full grasp on this world because of all of the suffering. Ve'afilu ha'ashirim ha'gedolim ve'afilu ha'sarim ein lehem shum olam hazeh klal. And even the rich and the great and sort of the officers, those who are in charge, they also sort of don't have any of this world. It's a, sort of such an interesting thing to think about. What does it mean when he says, "Ein lehem shum olam hazeh klal"? Ki kol yemehem kas umachovot, because all their days are anger and hurt. Ve'kulam le'im tradot u'da'agot ve'atzvut ve'yagon ve'nachat tamid, and all their days are full of pain and worry and sadness and sighing always. And everyone has their own suffering that is unique to them. And there is no one from all the people that are powerful that has everything the way they want it all of the time. Ve'kulam ke'chad mle'im yisurim u'da'agot tamid. And all of them are like each other, all as one, are full of the suffering and worry all of the time. Ve'zeh baror ve'yadua l'kol mi she'baki katzat behem u'drachechem. And this is clear and sort of obvious to anyone who is even a little bit sort of aware of their ways. So he's saying something, you know, sort of profound and also very straightforward. He's saying, first of all, he's saying there's so much suffering in the world. And he's saying that suffering does not discriminate. It doesn't matter how rich you are, yes, Rachel, if you could just scroll down so people could see the text, the full text. We're just a little bit further down, thank you. That it doesn't matter how rich you are, how much power you have, that the suffering hits everyone equally, and no one without suffering, and anyone who sort of lived in this world at all would be aware of this and would know this. We're going to scroll down. We're going to skip this second paragraph, not because it's not a beautiful paragraph, but Rabbi Nachman does a fair amount of sort of resummering sometimes, and so it's beautiful language to go over, but for our sake, we're going to go on. And we're going to move on to the third paragraph that begins, it's a short paragraph, it begins, "V'zeh kolel kol b'nei adam sheba'olam mi'akaton ve'ad gadol," and this includes everyone in the whole world from the small to the great, meaning both, you know, in terms of age, but here I think he's saying from one who is of sort of lesser importance to one who is of great importance. "Ki kulam noldu le'amal umle'im roges ve'yisorim," because everyone in the world is born to suffering and they are full of sort of anxiety and suffering. "Ve'ein shum etza ve'tachbola li'netzel me'amal," and there is no sort of wise advice or sort of cunning ploy that can save one from the suffering, ve'yagon, this sadness. "Ki im nivroach le'ashem yitbarach ve'lasok b'torah," the only thing that can save one from suffering is to run to God and to engage oneself in Torah. So Rabbi Nachman is saying that suffering is universal. We are all born to suffering. It doesn't matter who you are. And the only thing that one can do when experiencing suffering is to turn to Torah and to turn to God. We're going to also skip this next paragraph, Kimo, and then we'll continue with the paragraph on the next page that begins, "Ana ve'amar Rabbeinu," the Rebbe of blessed memory declared. Thank you. "Ana ve'amar Rabbeinu zichrono livracha." So again, this is Rabbi Nachman saying in the name of Rabbi Nachman, his teacher. So Rabbi Nachman, he would answer and he would say, "Hine hakol omrim sheyesh olam hazeh ve'olam haba." He said, everyone says that there is this world and the world to come, right? There's the idea, the very Jewish idea, the idea of there are these two worlds, the world that we're living in now and the world to come, the world that's going to be blissful and perfect in Mashiach. "V'hine olam haba, anu ma'aminim sheyesh olam haba." And the world to come, we believe that there is going to be this world to come. "Efshar sheyesh gam olam hazeh, gam ken be'ezo olam." And it's also possible that this world exists somewhere in this world. But here, when I look around, it looks like Gehenom, it looks like hell. "Ki kulam le'im yisorim gedolim tamin," because when I look around, everyone is so full of suffering. "Ve'amar she'enim tza shum olam hazekla." And so Rabbi Nachman would say, and so it seems that this world doesn't exist at all. It's a sort of a hard teaching to understand, but I think very powerful. He's saying, everyone says that there are two worlds, that there is this world and the world to come. And actually the world that you would think would be harder to believe in, that you would have to struggle more to believe in, would be Olam Haba, would be the world that we can't see. The question of, you know, really what happens to us after we live? Is there an Olam Haba? Is Mashiach going to come? Is there going to be a more perfect world? What is that going to be like? And he says, I don't have any problem believing in Olam Haba. Olam Haba, that's out there. And we believe we're going to get there. What I'm not actually so sure about is Olam Hazeh. I'm not sure that this world actually exists at all. Because when I look out at the world, when I see the intense suffering in the world, it causes me to say, She'ein nimsa shum olam hazekla, that this world actually doesn't exist at all. So the thing that I think is just so, and of course we're not, this isn't where Rabbi Nachman is going to leave us, but I want to just pause for a minute to acknowledge, I think the power of Rabbi Nachman, of this major Hasidic Rebbe who, you know, his whole life is about faith and about God and about Torah, being able to acknowledge sort of full stop the extent of suffering in the world and the extent that such suffering might cause one to say, it's as if this world doesn't exist. I want to pause now and give you a chance. Either you can unmute yourself. I think you have the ability to do that. Either you can unmute yourself or through the chat, sort of how are you understanding this text? We'll just take a few comments and then we'll move on. Rachel, if we could stop screen sharing for a minute, that would be great. Thank you. Okay, so Jonathan says, what does it mean this world doesn't exist at all? Couldn't you say that it clearly exists because we are suffering through this? Yeah, Jonathan, that's a great question. Perhaps I'm not articulately. It's something that I sort of feel on a level what he means. This world doesn't, I think, I'm gonna offer an explanation and then I would love if anyone else wants to jump in. I would love to hear your ideas of what he means when he says this world doesn't exist. I think the way I understand that is almost like the world that I have been promised doesn't exist at all. A world in which, you know, there's a certain amount of, I work in Torah and I am in relationship with God and I follow the mitzvot, sort of the world in which there's a certain sense of order and expectation. And if I do this, then this happens, that there's a sense in which there's so much suffering that world has been shattered and that world doesn't exist anymore. I mean, I feel that way a little bit now. But a little bit now, sort of post-corona, that there was a world that we knew, and that world that we knew pre-corona, that world doesn't exist anymore. But I would love to hear, I'd love to hear your thoughts if you're understanding
that. I have an idea.
Thanks, Miriam, go for it.
Well, I'm thinking when we are stuck in grief and suffering, it's almost as if there's a brick wall in front of our eyes, and we can't participate in the world. And in that sense, we've created our own awful bubble. We can't reach other people. Other people can't reach us because we are consumed in our pain. And the image I think of is like a brick wall in front of our eyes. We simply can't see past the pain. So we're not in the world.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Miriam. I appreciate that articulation. Yeah, Mariella?
Yeah, in my mind, when you were talking, the phrase that was coming back, is when we say something like, oh my God, this is surreal. This word is surreal. You know, that feeling is like, this cannot be real. Like this that I'm experiencing is so, so intense, which is paradoxical, right? Because it's so intense that you're feeling it with such an intensity, but at the same time, it's like, it's so hard to comprehend. It's like, this is beyond my capabilities of like processing these.
Beautiful. That sort of the world in which I'm experiencing, the experience of that world is so surreal I can't comprehend it. It's as if it's not the world that I expected to be here. Thank you. That's beautiful. Yeah, Robert.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think when we get into so much pain that I'm seeing, the idea of a shared world, a world in which we connect with other people and that we share with other people disappears, and so it's no longer there. It's no longer present for us.
That's amazing, and I feel that that connects back to what Miriam's saying. There's a sense of there's like a sense of a shrinking of a world which only includes me and my own sorrow, and this world that's about being out in the world with other people. That world has disappeared, which feels, I think, in some ways very relatable to the moment that we're in now, that there has that world in which we are together in community, that world doesn't exist anymore. And so our world has become much smaller. Okay,
this
I'm grateful.
Meryl, can I speak?
Yeah, Meryl, please.
Yeah, I'd like to take a little bit different tact because the way I reacted to this text was that it made me even question whether Rabbi Nachman believed in Olam Haba. Because in my experience as a chaplain, people's belief in a future or even a future world helped them deal with Olam Hazeh. And if he's having this much trouble with Olam Hazeh, and if that doesn't really exist, then does Olam Haba exist? It's almost like it's taking the whole ground out from under him.
Yes, Meryl, I totally hear you. And I think that's actually, to me, what's so powerful. And that I think the way you understand it is sort of the normal instinct of the way you understand it, right? That that if you can't believe in this world, that it would be even harder to believe in Olam Haba because you can't even get through this moment. And I think what's so powerful and sort of counterintuitive in his teaching is he says, the next world, I don't have any problem with. He says straight out, the next world, I believe in. We believe in that. That I can get my hands around, my mind around. What I actually can't grasp is this world, which I think is counterintuitive the way he's teaching that. And to me, that feels so powerful. The world in which I'm being promised good things and there's perfection and it's that I can understand. It's actually all the suffering I'm experiencing right now. That's what I can't grasp. Yeah, Linda.
Okay, I'm privileged to study with a Kabbalist in Jerusalem who has taught over and over again, evil is the illusion of something other than God. And this, the Buddhist interpretation of this world is an illusion. And the evil that we experience is an illusion because behind it all is God who is good and merciful. Seems to parallel very much what the Rebbe is saying here.
Yes, that's interesting. I don't know. What I'm hesitant, I think that's a beautiful teacher, Linda. What I hesitate here, and I'm not sure I won't speak for Rabbi Nachman, is I don't know. What seems powerful to me is I don't know that he's saying that it's an illusion. I think he's actually giving permission to acknowledge it as very real, that it's not an illusion, it's very real. And Dafka still, ultimately what he's going to teach, we have to get there, is actually still it's through there that we're gonna come to God. I mean, he's not gonna leave us at this point. Okay, despair and turn away from God. But I think he's both naming the reality of a world that's full of suffering. He has experienced it himself, and still we can use that to channel through towards God. With your permission, I see all of your beautiful hands. I want to see a little bit more text because I don't want to leave us here at this point. So we're going to turn back to the text. Rachel, I'll ask if we can go back into screen sharing mode. So the question is, once we get to this place of Rabbi Nachman, the sort of the deepness of acknowledging pain and suffering, that this world doesn't exist at all, then where do we go from here? I'm just thinking in terms of the interest of time. Okay, we're going to do, I want to apologize to you and to Rabbi Nachman, because we're going to cover a little bit quicker than I would like to, because I want you to get to see it. And also I want to say the reverse approach is also preferable to really get to sit and to hold his teaching longer. So we're going to balance both. So this is a very famous teaching of Rabbi Nachman from Likutei Moharan. V'haklal ki asur li'esh atzmo. And the rule is that it's forbidden to despair in oneself. Really what he's speaking about here is not despair in the world, but despair in oneself, to lose hope in oneself, that it could be a person becomes sort of so overwhelmed with their own self-doubt, their own inadequacies, that they lose faith in themselves. And he says, it's forbidden to do that. You can't lose despair in yourself. He goes on to say, even someone who's perfectly ordinary and unable to study at all, or is in a place where it's impossible for him to study, even so, also at the time of his simplicity, that person has to strengthen himself with fear of God and simple devotion according to his life. Basically, what he wants to say is, you don't have to be the smartest chacham in the room. Any person in their simplicity shouldn't lose faith in their self. They can turn themselves over to God and they can come to God. Ki asur li'esh atzmo, because it's forbidden to lose hope in yourself. It's forbidden to despair in oneself. It's this next part I want to focus on, this next paragraph. V'ha'ikar l'chazek atzmo b'chol ma she'efshar, ki ein shum ye'ush b'olam klal. And the essence, the main teaching is that a person has to strengthen themselves with everything that they can, because there is no such thing as ye'ush. There is no such thing as despair in this world, okay? He goes on to say, with your permission, I have to say, if you really want to become a Rabbi Nachman scholar, you have to know Yiddish, and I don't know Yiddish, so I'm not gonna misread this Yiddish for you. For those of you who are Yiddishists amongst you, you should read the next line in Yiddish for yourself. I'm gonna skip on. Amram bekoach gadol uve amkut nifla venora meod. And he would say this, that there is, he would draw out the words in Yiddish, that there is no despair. He would say this with great strength and sort of a wondrous depth, in order, kidei leherot ulerameh lekol echad v'echad ledorot, shelo yitya'esh b'shum ofen ba'olam, afilu im yavor lav ma, that he would really draw out kain ye'ush, that there is no despair, to teach everyone in all the future generations that there is no such thing as despair, to not despair in any way in this world. It doesn't matter what happens to you. And even if somehow you fall, in whatever way you fall, may God save you, that afterwards, after that fall, whatever happens to you, God save you, to strengthen yourself in whatever way you can, and that there still should be to that person hope to return and to go back to God. So he says something very interesting here. And I think that there's almost, I want to sort of point out what I think is almost a contradiction, that in the first paragraph he says, the haklal ki asor li'yayesh atzmo, he says, and the rule is it's forbidden to despair in oneself. But even in saying that, he acknowledges the existence of despair, right? If someone says, anytime the rabbis say, don't do something, they're saying don't do it because the existence of that thing exists. If he's teaching us don't despair, it's because he knows that people are despairing. So on one hand, he says, don't despair. And then in the second paragraph, what does he say? He says, ki ein shum ye'esh be'olam klal. He says, there's no such thing as despair. So I think that there's a bit of a tension that he's holding. How do we approach despair? Do we, on one hand, sort of deny despair? Do we say there is no such thing, there's no such thing as despair in this world in any way? Or do we acknowledge the despair? Do we sort of hold it in our hands? Do we acknowledge a world that's full of suffering and say, and even so, it's forbidden to despair. It's forbidden to lose hope. I think that there's a sense in which both of these approaches are necessary. Sort of how much do we, on one hand, in one moment, sort of look at the suffering, hold the suffering and say, and even so, I won't give into it. Even so, I'll find hope in myself. And on the other hand, do we sometimes have to see a world that is suffering and refuse to see it, just only see that hope and say, I refuse to acknowledge the suffering in the world. In this moment, it's actually too much for me to acknowledge. I'm only going to see the possibility of hope. I'm only going to see the possibility of return. And so, you know, ultimately we started in the first text with Rabbi Nachman saying, there's no such thing as this world. I look around, I see the suffering, and there's no such thing as this world. And now he's saying, and even so, it's forbidden to lose hope. It's forbidden to despair, because there is no such thing as despair. We have to push on to the hope. With your permission, I want to look at one more text together, and then I'm going to turn back over to you for comments. So let's look at the next teaching under section 3, Be Happy. So given that he's acknowledging, I think, the very real pain and suffering, so we're about to move on to this next text, where even though Rabbi Nachman has now acknowledged sort of the very real extent of suffering, the question now is, well, how do we get ourselves out of that suffering? He's given us permission to acknowledge it. He's now told us that we can't lose hope. And what is actually the path to holding that suffering in our lives, but still coming out? How do we find that resilience? So Rachel, go ahead, if you can, and screen share again. And we want to be looking at Likutei Moharan 2:24. While you're doing this, I'm going to read Robert's comment. But how can you tell, okay, Robert, so important. But how can you tell someone that it's forbidden to despair when they do despair? Shall we tell them they are wrong to despair? Will that not make them even more depressed for being wrong for being depressed? So Robert, your comment is so hugely important. I want to say a couple of things about this. First of all, I think, and I hope, you know, there is clinical depression, and then there is sort of like sadness and losing hope. I want to think and hope that this is not a teaching about someone who is clinically depressed. I think that this would be totally the wrong approach to take to someone, and unthinkably cruel and heartless. And for me, that's why I think that first teaching is so important, is that he's not saying your pain and suffering is an illusion, just get over it. I think he's saying there's very real reasons to feel pain and suffering in this world. I see in that a validating of the person's experience. So the first thing, Robert, I want to say is, like, I think that you're totally right. I would not recommend this approach to someone who is depressed, to say, you know, get over it. You have to find your way to be happy. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, for me, I read this teaching, even besides that, even let's assume people are having hardships in their life, whatever it is, I read this teaching as very much being focused inward of how do I understand it, and not something I would ever sort of teach outwards to other people. I think this would never be the right approach to approaching someone else's pain or suffering. That is their pain and suffering, and I would mainly see that as a vessel of, you know, listening and being present for them. For me, I see this as a text for me when I see myself turning inward or turning down or losing hope. This is a text that I might bring up for myself, not a text I would then turn on someone else to say, oh, well, you just have to move through it. But a very important point, Robert. Okay, so he says, so how do we come out of it? That's the question. He says, Mitzvah gedola liyot besimcha tamid, hitkaber le'archik ha'atzvut ve'ha'marashkora bekol kocho. He said, it's a great mitzvah to be happy always. It's so difficult, right? Because he even said in that first teaching, what did he say? He said, people are mle'im yisurim tamid. He used that same language. He said, people are full of suffering tamid, always. And now he's saying at the same time that we have to feel the reverse, that even at the same time, we have very real sort of reason to be feeling that real suffering always. We also have to be striving to feel happiness all of the time and to strengthen oneself, to distance ourselves from the sadness and the sort of the bitter blackness with all of our strength. The haklal shetzarich lihitkaber me'od bekol hakochot liot ach sameach tamid. And the rule is that we have to strengthen ourselves in all of our strength to be happy always. Ki teva ha'adam limshoch atzmo l'marash chora ve'atzvut machmat pig'ei u'mikrei hazman. And because it's the nature of a person to sort of draw themselves towards this, he calls it the marash chora, towards the sort of bitter darkness and sadness as a result of things that happen to us and things that happen as a matter of time. V'chol adam le'im male yisurim, and every person is full of suffering. Alken tzarich leachriach et atzmo bekoach gadol liot besimcha tamid ulesamech et atzmo bechol asher yuchal. And so because it's sort of so natural, a human nature is that we get drawn to these dark places and we have sort of legitimate reason to be full of suffering, we really have to force ourselves with every ounce of strength to be happy and to make ourselves happy in any way that we can. This part I think is very sweet. Ve'afilu b'milei shtuta. And even with sort of silliness, with silly manners, I say this not in any way to sort of make light of, again, depression and very real sadness, but I think there's something sweet about this, like Hasidic Rebbe teaching, you know, sometimes if you find yourself sad, you just have to sort of make a fool out of yourself. You have to tell jokes. You have to make yourself laugh. You have to sort of fake the, sort of force the happiness or the silliness to, the happiness to come through silliness. Here's the part that I really want to focus on. Ach. Shagam lev nishbarhu tov me'od. That said, a broken heart is also very important. Im kol ze rak be'ez sha'a, ve'ru'i likvoa lo ez sha'a be'yom l'shaber libo, l'fares sichato lifnei yitbarach. He said, a broken heart, even though I've just taught you that it's important to always be working towards happiness all the time, that it's so difficult to overcome our natural human tendency towards sadness and towards darkness. He says a broken heart is also really important. And so, but only for an hour, only for an hour. He says you should establish an hour every day to break your own heart and to talk, to open your conversation up with God. But the rest of the day, you have to be in happiness. Because from this period of brokenheartedness, you can easily come to this bitter darkness. More than a person stumbles through happiness. What he's trying to say, which I think is so interesting and beautiful, on one hand, there's the teaching of Rabbi Nachman that I think feels, I'm not able to read your chats while you're writing, but I imagine you're either writing this or you're thinking this. This goes back to what Robert is saying. There's something so challenging about being told to be happy all the time. How can anyone tell you to be happy all the time? Especially after he just gave us this gift of acknowledging very real suffering, to then be told, okay, your suffering is real, but also strive to be happy. And for me, it feels very powerful that he's saying, here he's at least acknowledging the lev nishbar. He's acknowledging the importance of every day setting aside time to allow yourself to be lev nishbar, to a few, even lishaber to lev, even to sort of like break your own heart open, to allow the heartbreak open. But then he's saying you have to somehow find a way to not stay there, because if you stay there, that's just going to give way to more and more darkness. So take the time, set the time every day, open up your heart to God. You can be sad And then the rest of the time, you have to be in this striving of being happy. And the way that I understand that liyot, how does he say it? That he says, liyot besimcha tamid, a person has to be happy always. The way I understand this is not that he's telling us we have to be happy always, but that we have to be in a place of trying to get ourselves to the place. That happiness is not a state of being that we just flick on a switch and now we're happy. But sort of being happy is a process. It's something that we are trying to grow towards, because as he's understanding in human nature, and I think he's talking about his own human nature, is if we're not striving for it, it's so easy for that lev nishbar, that very legitimate broken heart, to give way to this sort of expanse of darkness, this expanse of bitterness. Okay, I want to pause now and take time for all of your comments. And I am the one screen sharing. So let me just figure out how to stop screen sharing so we can see our faces. Okay, yeah, please.
Avi?
Yes, Robert.
Yeah, so people sometimes are so depressed, get up floor. And I don't tell them to be happy. I tell them, okay, you're on the floor here. They're frozen on the floor. What can you do? Can you move your finger? Yeah, I can move my finger. All right, move your finger. How does that feel? It feels fine. Okay, can you move your toes? Yeah, I can move. Okay, move your toes. Can you crawl? Yeah, I can crawl. And they crawl. I say, okay, crawl. And they crawl. And okay, can you lift yourself up on a chair? Oh, do that. Well, step by step, I don't try them to be happy, but by the end of 15 minutes, they're laughing. I don't go from being in despair to being happy. They can do one little thing. That one little thing will help them move through their despair, through their darkness, to find something that's light.
I appreciate that, Robert. Yeah, and I think, yes, I appreciate that very much. And I think that to me feels like we could read the lihiyot besimcha tamid as you just have to flip the switch and be happy. And what I hear you saying, and what I think echoes with how I understand it, is it's not that we have to be in that happy place. It's that we have to be taking those very small steps. And sometimes those very small steps is just waking up in the morning, maybe getting out of bed, maybe getting dressed. So that actually might be all we can manage that day. And that's great. That's where we are that day. Monica, you're raising your hand so politely using the function. Go for it.
It may be not getting out of bed. It may be just opening your eyes.
Just opening your eyes. Thank you, Robert. Yeah, Monica.
Yeah, I think one of the things that he's saying is that, you know, yeah, you're going to set aside some time for this, but this is not time to just wallow in it, that there is a specific action that you have to take in this remorse and this despair that you're giving into, which is to bring it to God and to pour out your heart. And you know, I can't quite tell what exactly he's asking us to do beyond, you know, bring it to God, but that channel it, in other words.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think that would be another great session of once we're in that sadness, sort of how do we bring that sadness outside? This sort of goes back to what people were saying about the collapsing of the world, that your world becomes so small, you're only in your pain. And I think part of that bringing it to God is a beginning of expanding, re-expanding that world. Okay, I saw more hands. Miriam, and then it looks like we have another Meryl. Okay, great. Miriam and then Meryl.
I have two ideas. The first one, I've been studying the book of Devarim. And one of the things that I find unbearable is the fact that Moshe never gets to cross into the promised land. I mean, talk about pain, grief. It's like what he's wanted his entire life. And I've never found a satisfactory answer, you know, about why this is happening to him. And it just goes to show, first of all, that he too is a human being. He too is going to die with desires that are unfulfilled, just like the rest of us. But I think that as he's writing Sefer Devarim, it's his cri de coeur, you know, his crying out of his heart. And he's trying to grapple with exactly what this despair is. And I think he's suggesting, or one idea he's suggesting is, that we have to cross over from our grief into another place. He's doing it by teaching, by sort of leaving his legacy. And of course, when you're And it takes him a whole book of Devarim to get there. So I agree with Robert. It's very slow. It's a process. And it's never entirely satisfactory. We have to accept that we're going to have a piece of that grief and a piece of that pain, no matter how far we come. There's going to be a piece of broken heart, because as Nachman says in this first paragraph, that's the human condition.
Thank you, Miriam. I love that. I appreciate that. I think very much. I think something to take away from this is sort of the process, the amount of time. And Miriam, I also appreciate that even that there's, it's not only a process that perhaps we eventually get to that place of this complete simcha that you're saying, we actually never get to that place of complete simcha, that complete happiness, that there is always a piece of the brokenhearted, which I think is what Rabbi Nachman is teaching. He's saying you always, it doesn't matter where you are, there is always going to be that hour for Lev Nishbar, for the brokenheartedness. And if not, then you should lishaber to Lev, then you should break the heart to allow for that peace to exist. Thank you. Meryl.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that for me, Tisha B'Av has always been the way that that communally we recognize and validate that there's brokenness. And it's always amazing to me that we don't know how to cry out as a people. I don't know, it, as a rabbi and someone who tries to bring that to people, we're afraid to go there. And Rabbi Nachman, gives us permission to do it, to validate it, to be there. And then to also leave that place, but I feel like he's doing it in community that uplifts each other. And he doesn't say this explicitly, but his life was all about being in a very intentional community. And I think we've also lost a piece of that in our modern world.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Both thinking about sort of the ability to just cry out. That is something that he talks about. I think he talks about that tzaka, that cry. There's a piece that we're not going to look at today that you have in your source sheet that you should look at that's very powerful, that very much connects to what Dina Weitz was just teaching about in the Devar Torah that she gave, talking about the role of sighing. He talks about, I love these teachings about how important sighing and groaning is, letting the body just sort of release the sorrow through an audible sound. And also thinking about what's the role in community as people are going through this? How do we as community support each other and make space for that? Okay, there's a couple more texts that I would like to see, but I also want to make space if there's one last comment. Yehudis, are you?
Yes, so along the lines, the connection with Tisha B'Av, I think there's a compatible teaching, a Hasidic teaching, Misha Nichnas of Matim Simcha, when Av comes in, we diminish simcha, but the Hasidic teaching is mematim, we diminish the pain through simcha. So I think that's related to what Rabbi Nachman is saying here.
That's beautiful. We diminish the pain through simcha. That's beautiful. I think that, Yehudis, I think that's going to connect to our next teaching, so you'll help me bring that back. Thank you. Okay, let's hear from Norm, because he's raising his hand so nicely, and then we're going to move on. Norm, go for it.
Thank you. In the text, there was some language there that is open to the interpretation that Reb Nachman thinks that at least part of this suffering that human beings endure is their own fault, and perhaps even is the result of our own sinful behavior. Why else are we, is he advocating remorse? That suggests to me that perhaps that, he believes that a lot of this suffering is in a way payback for not being the kind of people that we ought to be. And maybe he even felt that way with respect to the suffering in his own life. That you at the beginning told us how horrific, his own suffering was. And I guess a related question is, I know that, I recall that Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, who was also, I believe, a Hasid from that movement, had no problem you know, accusing God of, you know, of not doing God's job in terms of trying to relieve suffering. And I don't know if that was ever part of Rabbi Nachman's life as well.
Yeah, those are interesting questions. I've been learning, I've been reading a lot of the teachings of the Eish Kodesh right now, the Pius Zessener Rebbe who was writing during the time of the Holocaust, and there's just so many powerful teachings of really like crying out to God and you know, asking for God's interference or asking for God's intervening and why that's not slow to go and still sort of turning to faith. So Norm, you're making me think of the Eish Kodesh now. In terms of Rabbi Nachman thinking, in terms of Rabbi Nachman, sort of a theology of sort of reward and punishment and suffering all being meted out. You know, honestly, I'm hesitant to comment too directly on that because I would have to sort of do more learning on sort of Rabbi Nachman to be able to say with, but I mean, I think what I'll say there is you're seeing that from the English translation of Lev Nishbar as being translated as remorse. I think that could be a fair, I mean, I'm translating Lev Nishbar more literally as a broken heart. So I think one thing is I don't want to get too hung up on that because part of that is how it's being translated, when it's translated as remorse and we read that in. What I think does sound, where I would go, what I would say is that to the extent that I think he does feel like a person holds some responsibility, I would say in terms of when our pain and sadness distances, he does talk a lot about tshuva in the sense of returning to God, in the sense of when our pain and sorrow causes us to distance ourselves from God, that we then, you know, he says that even in the end that we should, in this piece, that we should, I'm just seeing if that language is actually here, that we should then return to God. So I think I would hear it, I think I see that Lev Nishbar as being about when the very real suffering that we have legitimate reason to feel causes us to be distanced from God, and then to the extent that there is a tshuva to be done, that tshuva is sort of finding our way back to God. I'm not necessarily reading that as because we did something to cause the things to be happening. That said, there actually is another piece. You know what, Norm? I'm happy to, there is another piece that I think directly answers your question about God's role in causing pain and sorrow and our responsibility. It's too big of a topic that I don't want to introduce to this, but if you email me separately, I will send you that source, okay? And we can do another session on it. Okay, with your permission, I want to make sure we sort of see one or two more sources. So where we are now is Rabbi Nachman was after sort of allowing for the despair, allowing for the pain and acknowledging that, he was then saying, nevertheless, we still have to find ourselves towards this thing called happiness. We have to be in the striving for happiness. And still too, the place of a Lev Nishbar, a broken heart, has a very real use. And we have to find time for that every day. Just don't let it become your entire day because the human nature is to give ourselves over to that. I want to look at one or two more texts with you. So we're going to go into screen sharing. Here we go. Okay, you guys are seeing my screen now? I assume, yes, screen sharing. Okay, so this is, I wanna show a are you seeing on the topic of Simcha, Ben Yana Simcha? Okay, Norm is saying yes, amazing. Okay, so he has this beautiful analogy. I'm gonna read part of it in English and then we'll read a little bit in the Hebrew. He says, it's like this. Sometimes when people are happy and they dance, they grab someone standing outside the circle who is be'atzvut umarash shchora, that are in sadness and the sort of bitter blackness. So, and they, against his will, they bring him into the circle of dancers. Against his will, they force him to be happy along with this. So imagine like you're at a wedding simcha and there's all the people that are happy and dancing. And then there's the people standing on the sidelines who don't really want to join in and who seem sad and happy. And you bring them in anyway. They say, no, I don't want to join. You bring them in anyway against their will. And then they come to enjoy the dancing and they're happy. And he says, "Ken yesh ben yana simcha." So too with happiness, when a person is happy, loom and suffering stand on the side, that when you're happy, the suffering sort of, there's this divide between happiness and sadness as though they can't cross, right? The happiness is dancing on the circle and the sadness is standing outside being bitter. But what do we have to do? Really the greater thing to do, lihitametz, lirdof achara marash chora dafka. Really what we need to do is to be brave enough to chase after that bitter blackness, chase after those gloomy, sad parts of ourselves, specifically Dafka, to go after them, le'achnis ota gam ken b'tocha simcha, and to bring it forcibly into the happiness, be'ofen she'amaras chora be'atzma kitapech le'simcha, and in this way, that bitter, that darkness itself will turn into happiness. I think this is, Yehudas, this I think was what you were making me think of here, that, and this I think is so, Robert, this sort of reminds me of some of the comments that you were making, that it could be that we sort of keep happiness and sadness separate, that we have the happiness and then the sadness stands on the outlines. And he's saying, actually, what it's not only that we have to acknowledge the place of suffering, we have to acknowledge sadness. Sometimes the way we get to happiness is he's saying, you would think that what you should do is leave your sadness on the sidelines. Well, I have some happiness going, I have some sadness over there, I'll keep them separate, I'll leave the sadness on the sidelines, it's not bothering anyone. And he's saying, no, really, what the brave thing to do is, you have to go after that sadness. You have to actually, you have to approach the thing that you're afraid of, approach the thing that is hard and scary, approach the thing that you're trying to suppress, and actually bring that in forcibly, and bring that into the happiness, because it's only through acknowledging the sadness, through pursuing the sadness, that you're going to ultimately be able to transform it into happiness. If you don't go after the darkness, it stays as a place of darkness. To me, I think that this is just feels like a very powerful teaching, as so much of the time when we feel that sadness and the pain, we are taught, or we think what we should do is to sort of suppress it or to push it down and to not engage with it. And actually he's saying, not only is there a place for it, but you actually have to go after it and pursue it and bring it into the circle of your happiness, because that's the only way that your sadness is going to be able to be transformed. I wanna look at, David, I see your hand. I wanna look at one more final text together, because we're coming to a close, and then I'll take your last comments. And sometimes even doing what Rabbi Nachman is saying, even the striving towards happiness, but allowing the hour of Lev Nishbar, the brokenheartedness, even bringing the gloom in, sometimes, as Robert said, sometimes all of this is still too much. It's still too big of an ask. And so what do we do then? So I'm just gonna scroll back up. Are you seeing the text from Sichot Aran, the word kasha?
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. So this is gonna end on. Shayach la Torah, kasha. Roshei Tevot, Shema Hashem Koli Ekra. So he said, the word kasha, which we know is even from the Gemara as a term of being like, there's a difficulty, there's something we can't resolve. He says, the kasha is actually a Roshei Tevot. If you mix up the first letters, it's meaning Roshei Tevot, meaning, what is it called? An acronym. If you mix up the Shema, Yud of God's name, the Kuf of Koli and the Aleph of Ekra, and you rearrange them, listen to me, God, hear my voice when I call. If you rearrange them, you get an acronym for the word Kasha. So in rooted into the word Kasha is this pasuk, is this verse, hear me, God, hear my voice, I'm calling out to you. That what a difficulty is that plea to call out to God. So what does he say? The ha'ikar ki atzaka belibo be'atzma hu bechinat emuna. And really the essence is that crying out. So this goes to, was it Meryl you were talking about, the crying out, the importance of crying out? The essence of the crying out in one's heart, that crying out in itself is an aspect of faith. Ki afal pi sheba'im alav kfirot gedolot v'kushiyot, because even so, there are all these doubts and questions and difficulties that are coming upon that. Im kol ze me'achar she'tzo'ek al kol panim belibo, bevadai. Even so, even though all these difficulties are coming upon him, the fact that he cries out, nevertheless, in his heart, still clearly there's like a sparkling, a point of holy faith in that person's heart. Ki im chas v'shalom lo hayabo od shum nekuda me'emuna klal lo yatzle klal, because God forbid that there wasn't this little spark of faith still in that person's heart, they wouldn't cry out at all. The very fact that you cry out, the very fact that you cry out to God, even if what you're crying out is, Norm, I think this goes to your point a little bit, the very fact that you're crying out and saying, God, why aren't you quicker to release me from my pain and sorrow? Why are you causing me all this sorrow? The fact that you are even crying out with your doubts, reveals that you still have that nekuda, that point of faith. Because if you didn't have that, you wouldn't cry out. And you see that the crying out in itself is faith, and it's important to understand this. And it's actually through the crying out that you will come to faith. Because the crying out is like an aspect of faith, as it's said above. It's an amazing phrase. It's just that the faith is in a very small, large place. It's like, it's very small. It's small in a very large way. And it's through the crying out that you will be able to merit sort of a more full-fledged faith. Until you can grow and raise up the faith so that all the doubts and questions will leave you. And even so, even if you don't make to this full-fledged faith, even if you never get yourself to the place where all the doubts leave you, nevertheless, the crying out is good in itself. I think that's where we leave it. What I love about this is he's saying, first of all, sometimes we think that doubt, we think that calling out to God, we think that saying, you know, the Psalms are full of people crying out to God and saying, God, where are you? And he's saying it's actually the cry itself is in the aspect of faith. And it's that crying out that will bring you to that fuller faith. And then he says at the end, he gives us permission because he says, and you know what? That's not even the ultimate end goal. It might be that you never get there. It might be that you always stay. You're going to be a person with doubts for the rest of your life. And that's actually okay. That just the crying out in itself, that is enough. That there is value in just crying out. And so, Robert, that's sort of where I come back to what you were saying. And sometimes we're just going to stay in that place of crying out. But as long as we're crying out, it means that we're still engaging. It means that we're still reaching. I want to apologize deeply. I so want to hear your response and thoughts on this. And I know I have to end on time because I know you have a busy schedule. So I'm going to end now. I'm going to, with permission, go 1 minute over. I want to just take a pause because we've learned so much Rabbi Nachman Torah today. And there's so many things that haven't yet been said in this space together because we didn't get to hear enough of your thoughts. So let's just take a pause. I want to go back to the beginning. I want to give you just a moment to articulate from Rabbi Nachman's Torah a prayer or a hope for yourself. If you were to turn some aspect of this Torah into a prayer for yourself, what would that prayer be? We'll just take a moment there. I want to thank all of you. I'll stop screen sharing so I can see your faces one last time. I want to thank all of you for being in the session today. I would be excited to hear your thoughts after the session. Feel free to email me. And I just want to sort of give you the blessing and hope that whatever that prayer you articulated for yourself, that is something that is able to stay with you, that something from this session stays with you, and to bless us and hope us all that we are able to hold the pain, confront the pain, acknowledge the pain, make space for it, for that lev nishbar, and also to be in that small way, to be in that process of striving, of trying to bring that happiness in, of giving space, that it is through, we don't have to deny the sorrow, but it is actually through going deep into the sorrow, of going after it and bringing it into the circle, that is the only way that there's a chance that we might turn it into happiness. So wishing you the best in the rest of your learning this week. Thank you.